This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? National.
President Trump announced today on Twitter that he had fired John Bolton as national security advisor, all over disagreements. Now, what those disagreements are, we don't quite know, but this could obviously be some bad news on a number of fronts. Joining me to react is Ben Shapiro. He's the editor of The Daily Wire and host of The Ben Shapiro Show, heard right here on KTH, right when my show ends at 6. So you're not a fan of this move. Tell us why.
I'm not thrilled. I mean, not thrilled, Bob. I mean, number one, I think that it is reflective of the rapidly changing mind of the president. So President Trump tends to be extremely bifurcated in his foreign policy. On the one hand, he wants to appear to be this big tough guy who's willing to undergo any battle for American interests. On the other hand, he's actually pretty conciliatory with regard to diplomacy. He's constantly attempting to reach out to Kim Jong-un, for example, and he will brush off Kim Jong-un's militarism in favor of portraying negotiations as working. And that's actually somewhat Obama-esque, right? Obama would constantly ignore the provocations of the Iranian government in the middle of negotiation because he wanted the deal and he was more interested in the deal than in a workable deal. Well, Bolton was what you call a foreign policy realist. His belief was that personal diplomacy was not going to solve all the problems of the world, that the Taliban have their interests, the Iranians have their interests, the North Koreans have their interests, and we have our interests. And sometimes those interests do not align, and simply getting people in a room and hashing it out is not going to solve the problem. And this apparently started to come to a head, particularly over the Taliban negotiation, where Bolton was very anti. He kept saying, listen, the Taliban, turns out, bad guys. And also, when they say they're going to end terrorism, they are terrorists, so no, that's not a thing. And it looked like publicly Bolton was sort of clashing with the president on all of that, particularly since Trump had this bizarre idea to invite the Taliban to Camp David, which was in fact a bizarre and bad idea, and I think Trump ended up with some egg on his face over that. They also have disagreements on Iran. Bolton believes that the Iranian regime is not likely to come to the table with anything of material value absent additional United States pressure. Trump, I think, would like to get to a deal. And it's unclear how different that deal would actually be than the original Iran nuclear deal that was perpetuated by President Obama. That original Iran nuclear deal basically delayed their nuclear program with some verification, but did not do anything to stop ballistic missile testing or funding of terrorism around the region. The whole idea behind the sanctions was, okay, if we're going to push Iran into a new nuclear deal, well, then it would retain all of those nuclear provisions, but add on provisions that ban terrorism. It's unclear to me how much interest Trump has in that. He may be just running out of steam on that whole conflict. And then when it comes to North Korea, obviously Bolton and Trump really didn't see eye to eye here. President Trump has constantly been engaging this personal diplomacy. I'm going to go over there. We're going to write love letters to each other. Kim Jong-un's the best. And Bolton obviously believed that was not only a waste of time, it was counterproductive. So there were serious disagreements inside the administration. President Trump does not brook disagreement lightly, and he does not like it, particularly if publicly facing, you're not willing to pay obeisance to him. It seems that Secretary of State Pompeo is a little better than that. I know that Pompeo has significant disagreements with Trump on a lot of these issues, too. But when it comes to public facing statements, Pompeo is a lot more in line with what Trump wants than what Bolton had been.
Well, and that's really what it feels like this is more about than anything. Because, look, I get that people don't like John Bolton. They call him hawkish. And it's true. He is 100% hawkish. And I think that's a reasonable label to put on him. But if you're someone who, as president, kind of go towards that business mentality of I will get a deal, I want someone around him who's going to be a little bit hawkish. But when you watch the cable news networks the way that Donald Trump does and holds that much importance in how you are presented on cable news, it doesn't make any sense to go out publicly and even hint at a disagreement.
Yeah, that's right. And this is one of the problems with the Trump administration generally, is that Trump actually takes his advice from cable news more than he takes it from people inside his own house. And this has been true whether you're talking about Fox and Friends or Tucker Carlson. And so if you're in his administration, there's always this temptation to go on TV and say to him on TV what you would normally say in a cabinet meeting. The problem is that if you're saying something that he disagrees with on TV, then he doesn't like you anymore.
Yeah.
So it's this bizarre sort of outreach and policy debate by television proxy. And Bolton was on the wrong side of that. Now, is this good leading up to an election? I'm not sure that any level of chaos is good inside the administration leading up to the election. It does put the media in this weird position where they've been constantly claiming that Trump wants World War III, and then he just ousted the biggest hawk in his administration. So I'm not sure where they go with that exactly. But I do fear that this may be the prelude to the president signing on to some bad policy with regard to Iran or North Korea or with the Taliban.
Well, we'll see what that all holds in store for us, obviously. Ben Shapiro Show hosts his show right here on KTTH 6 to 9. So right when I'm done, he takes over. He'll provide some more analysis on this topic and all of the news of the day. Plus, you can check out his newest book. It's absolutely fantastic. It's called The Right Side of History, How Reason and Moral Purpose Made the West Great. Check it out on Amazon. Ben, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Good to talk to you. Catch you then.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The environment.
So about 1,000 employees over at Amazon are going to walk out to protest Amazon and their purported inaction on climate change. Every single one of those people who decides to stop working on that day in protest should be fired. On the way in, they should literally be handed a slip that says, yeah, thanks, your services are no longer needed here. Now, this group is called the Amazon Employees for Climate Justice. They posted a piece on Medium.com calling out the company, and they said in this thing, as employees at one of the largest and most powerful companies in the world, our role in facing the climate crisis is to ensure our company is leading on climate, not following. We have to take responsibility for the impact that our business has on the planet and on people. And as a result of that, they've also put together a nice little nifty video showing all these different employees of Amazon speaking out and explaining why they're going to protest.
I'm walking out on September 20th because the world's most beautiful landscapes are disappearing.
So the world's most beautiful landscapes are not disappearing. Let's not go into this world of hyperbole. They're not disappearing. You can make the argument about climate change, which is 100% real, how we go about responding to that. There's a little bit of a disagreement. By a little bit, I mean there's a lot of disagreement. But let's not do this. Oh, it's just I wandered outside and it's just barren desert land. There used to be a park there and now it's just sand. Sand and ashes.
I'm walking out on September 20th because the world's most beautiful landscapes are disappearing. And a decade from now, they may not even exist. I'm walking out.
What? She said they're disappearing. But then she said they may not exist anymore. That you can't disappear and be there at the same time, yeah?
Yeah, I see your point.
I'm just calling it out as I see it.
I'm walking out on September 20th because I feel climate change is the most imminent threat to humanity that we face as a whole.
I'll let them finish. The most imminent threat that faces this globe. We're all going to die if we don't do something. And all you're doing is walking out either during your lunch break or you're maybe skipping out on an hour's worth of work. Is that all you're doing? Or are you going to do something a little bit more important? Because we're literally all going to die, you're telling me.
Today.
I'm walking out. Because those that are the least responsible for the climate crisis are the ones feeling the most climate impact.
Because everything is on fire and it's not fine.
Because the planet is
Oh, well, if the planet is bleeped, I guess we should just move on and just give up. I hate hyperbole like this, and I hate positions that people take like this to present themselves as heroes, whereas they're not really doing anything. And they're doing it all from a perspective of privilege, because they generally know that they're not going to be fired, because Jeff Bezos doesn't want to have to deal with that, but they all should be fired. Now, they're walking out in solidarity with this global strike for workers and students going to be held, as you just heard there, on the 20th, but it's supposed to go that entire week. And as part of these walkouts, the group is demanding the following things. Zero emissions company-wide by 2030. That's not ever going to happen. That's not possible. They're not going to have zero emissions company-wide. And usually when there are positions like that, they usually will say, well, we know that, but you should just pay some offsets. You should put some money back into a local government. So that means this isn't really about getting rid of the emissions. It's about taxing a business. Number two, they want zero contracts through Amazon Web Services with fossil fuel companies. Well, how about this? If you do not like that they're doing business with legitimate organizations, you don't have to work at Amazon. And then they say zero funding for lobbyists and politicians that deny climate change. There are a small handful of people that, quote unquote, deny climate change. That's not what they're talking about here. If you really want to know what they're saying is don't give any money to Republicans that don't want to dismantle capitalism and enjoy some good old economic terrorism. All in the name of listening to the crazy people like AOC. And by the way, let's say Amazon doesn't meet any of these demands, which they're not going to meet. Amazon's not going to meet these demands. So what's going on, all you dudes and ladies who are deciding to walk out? Are you going to quit your job? Probably not. You're not going to quit your job at all. That's called the height of progressive privilege. This whole idea that I'm willing to skip out on work, but actually not quit. Well, how about this? If they want to go ahead and meet some of these, what if they cut your pay in order for them to pay for it? Amazon is a very frugal company. They're frugal because just until recently, they've not actually been making a profit. I know because they're so huge, you think that they're making billions and billions and billions of dollars. No. That's not true at all. Are you willing to take a pay cut, take less of the blood money, in order to allow Amazon to afford these things? And if the answer is no, why don't you just get another job? Or just stop bothering me with your stupid tweets and your medium.com. So we're going to try to get some of these people on. Something tells me they probably won't go on and debate this issue with me. But we'll see. Until then. Send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. That phone number is 1-800-465-8770. Text 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link, you can react to anything that we're talking about. But if you text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you a link to my latest blog. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
The fight over the Sound Transit 3 card tab scam is now in front of the Washington State Supreme Court. Joining me in studio to talk us through all the arguments that were heard today, Hannah Scott, our friend from our sister station, Cairo Radio. Hannah, what exactly did they argue today?
This is really limited in scope. The argument is over whether the bill that the legislature passed to give Sound Transit the authority to put to voters on ST3 was constitutional. The argument is, from the lawyers for the taxpayers who are suing over this, that it was absolutely not constitutional because it amended an RCW, which has to do with the vehicle valuation system, mm-hmm. and it only referenced the RCW. It did not spell out the text of that RCW, which is unconstitutional, according to Joel Ard, who is the lawyer for the taxpayers who are suing over this.
Our Constitution requires that they set forth the amendment at full length, and they didn't do that. And that has a couple sort of negative repercussions. One of the most important ones is that if you go to the existing code of RCW, it's got a valuation schedule written into it with all the tables and everything, and it's just wrong. And it doesn't say that. It says on its face that it governs a locally imposed motor vehicle excise tax, but it doesn't. And so that's the kind of amendment that the Constitution was designed to force the legislature to write out so that the ensuing code would be accurate.
Now, I was in court when they argued this in the lower court in Pierce County last year, and you had somebody from the state AG's office there. Mm-hmm. You had the Sound Transit lawyers there, and it was just this big spectacle. There were giant props and a lot going on. That judge sided with the state, and Sound Transit found it constitutional. Very quickly, same-day decision, which shocked everyone. But she basically said, I feel like this is maybe above my pay grade, so it needed to go to the high court.
That's what you want to hear from judges.
I know.
I don't
there
really
was some
want to
criticism
do
about that.
I don't want to really do the work or put any legal argument into it. You guys figure it out. I feel like, however, the Supreme Court's going to side with Sound Transit and the state on this. There was what was the case? It was about 6 months ago. Thurston County judge said an initiative, because it wasn't fully written out on the, you know, the forms that people were signing. Then it went to the Supreme Court.
1639 was the gun.
Yeah, it was the gun one. And so then the Supreme Court said, oh, you don't have to do it. I feel like they're just going to do the same thing where, yes, we've got laws on the books, but they don't like those laws, so they're just going to throw them out.
And we'll see. Joel, the lawyer, I asked him, and I said, you know, do you feel, given the makeup of the court or whatever, are you concerned about any of that? He feels like it's going to go well. He feels like he's going to prevail. We'll see.
Both sides say that, and that's the issue. Like, of course, he's going to say publicly, I strongly believe in this. Of course, they're going to. He's not going to say, well, I don't know. It's kind of a wishy-washy case. Of course, he's not going to say that. I'm on his side. I want
right,
to
no, I get
all of this. But the fact of the matter is, we have a recent court case where the Supreme Court actively decided not to use the letter of the law as it relates to initiatives. And there's no reason why we should expect that they're all of a sudden going to get rid of that thinking when they go into this case.
Well, and it's a little different because it's about holding the legislature accountable.
It's all the same to them, is my point, is that right. This is just a generalized position that it feels like they're going down. And okay, if that's what they're going to do, then the laws don't matter anymore. We need new Supreme Court justices. These are elected positions.
Yes. So one thing I want to point out is, even if this is found unconstitutional, and so what would happen if he were to come out and prevail on this, is that he would then go back to the lower court because they would have to address the issue of refunding everybody's money, all that car tab money you've paid that was very high.
Good.
Because it would be an unconstitutional tax.
They can't
collect. They have to give it back and they can't collect it anymore. But then the legislature can come back next session and just do it again the right way if it was found unconstitutional.
They could, although here's the rub in that. You're also going to vote in November on the $30 car tap fee.
Right.
And so it's also possible that that passes, and my sense as it will pass.
Yes, and then immediately be in a lawsuit.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's just a rigmarole. Like, it drives me nuts. You've got initiatives that people say they support,
yep,
then immediately get overturned. Then the state legislature doesn't follow the rules. The taxpayers sue,
yep,
and then we get immediately overruled.
Yep.
And so there's no winning.
There's
no winning until you change the makeup of the courts and you change the makeup of the state legislature. That at the end of the day, that's really in Washington state, that's the only thing that matters.
But that's been an issue with no matter which party's been in control of the legislature.
This is just the way that it works in Washington. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely maddening. They only care about you guys at home when you're in a position to vote for them or vote for their opponent. Then they really care about what you have to say. But then afterwards, when you give them that power, they go ahead and say, well, we know better than you. We're cool. We want you to go stay in your little lane over there and let us just handle
things.
There was
a lawmaker who literally said that. Yeah. I think it was Senator Peterson about something specifically.
Of course it was a Democrat.
At any rate, I do want to point out, too, Joel said that there was, and I don't know the specifics of the ruling on the charter schools from the state Supreme Court, but whatever they did there, he felt kind of supported this argument that he's making here and could come out.
I want him to win. I want this to get thrown out. I want our money back. I want it to go back to the legislature. By the way, at a time where there's going to be a lot of focus on whether or not they should stay in power, the Democrats.
Yes.
Like, the timing is better for the taxpayers right now.
And I feel like that they're taking advantage of that. Like the taxpayers, some Republicans who are running for office already that have announced, are really feeling like this might be the year that they can seize on all of this.
Yeah, and look, Republicans are in Washington State. I know people like to go to Danny Westneed of the Seattle Times for reviews on what the strength of the Republican Party is. Republicans right now have a lot of stuff on their side. Now, the Trump election in Washington State, it clearly throws a wrench in everybody's plans. There is a Trump effect here. However, the Trump effect is kind of only in certain parts of the state. And so if you can pick up some on the eastern part of the state on an issue like this that is incredibly important, I know that this doesn't specifically
because they don't pay it.
But this is one of those things of this is what's happening on the west side of the state. This is all being driven by Seattle.
Yep.
Let's keep Seattle politics out of it. The Spokane mayor race.
Yes,
it's
I know.
All about fighting
Seattle
to not become Seattle. Snohomish County Council.
Same.
They're having the exact same conversation. So the bad policies of Seattle, and we say this on the show all the time, bad policies of Seattle always spread. They always spread. Sometimes it means they're going from Seattle to Kirkland to Tacoma and Olympia. Sometimes it means it's going to Olympia in the sense of the legislature,
right?
Mm-hmm. Which then brings it all across the state. And that's a problem.
And that is. And remember, in the midterms, we heard these same arguments, but it didn't help keep Democrats from winning more seats.
It didn't in the midterms. Mm. But you know what? Now you've got a lot of time on your hands, which are actually impacted by the bills.
Yes.
Right?
And
now people are looking at the car tap fees that they paid. And they're like, I support transit, but this is absurd how much you're... This is a 1991 Toyota Corolla. Yeah. You're charging me how much for this? Why is it more expensive? That's just how it is, and people are going to remember that.
And I think there are definitely people who are still concerned about those high car tabs, but then there are transit lovers who are like, it's all good, and they don't mind
the crazy
the
transit lovers who don't actually own cars, and they don't care.
Right.
I mean, the people who take the position that I don't care about the car tab fees, it's worth it, they don't own cars.
Yep.
They don't own cars.
Or they live in Granite Falls.
but these are the people who, you know, take transit every single... Cool. You should pay more.
Yeah.
if you love the service, you should pay more. Because right now, I can very clearly tell you that the service that we get transit-wise, in a general sense, at least in Western Washington, not very good. It takes you 2.5 hours to go from West Seattle to the Ballard. 2.5 hours. And yet these are the people who say transit's the best. Transit's the best. Oh my gosh, we should pay out the wazoo if we have to.
But it's that slow because we don't have the infrastructure that we need.
We have
and this is supposed to give it to us.
But this is a lie because it doesn't give us anything. This doesn't give us any new infrastructure. We're making it worse for cars, and it's still worse for buses. You know why? Because buses and cars, they
don't
share
this.
But then you put in a stupid bike lane.
Or a streetcar.
Or a streetcar that no one's going to take.
No.
Because no one's taking it now!
And there's a grand vision, and it's all supposed to work out. We'll see. At any rate, no decision today from the state Supreme Court. It's expected
literally
to come.
Just wrapping up now, if it hasn't already wrapped up while I was yelling about it.
Right. So we'll wait and see what happens.
You know, there was one point when I was on in mornings where you would come in, and it would always make me upset. And I feel like we've had several stories where you didn't get me all riled up. Today, just broke it. You
back in it.
You just broke that.
Yeah, and it'll only get better.
You're the worst, Hannah Scott.
We've got elections, presidential primaries coming up. It's going to be great.
MyNorthWest.com has the full write-up of Hannah's piece. Thank you so much for stopping by.
You bet. Always a pleasure.
You're listening to the Jason Rancho. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you for all of the text messages that you're sending at 1-800-465-8770. I want to just put you in the role of a dude named Tommy. Because Tommy finds himself waking up to this sound three times a week in his Lower Queen Anne neighborhood apartment. It's so loud! Imagine waking up to this as frequently as he does. Imagine what it must feel like, how maddening it must be. That's what's happening right now in Lower Queen Anne, where residents and their pets are being terrorized by a Recology waste truck, picking up trash, recycling, being so incredibly loud, it's impossible for anyone to get a good night's sleep.
We realized that we were just getting bombarded with trash trucks. And it wasn't just like trash trucks coming and going. It was like four times a week, three times a morning, and super, super early too. They start around like 5:20.
5:20 in the morning. That's Tommy. He lives with his girlfriend, they've got two cats, and they're dealing with this constantly. And he gets that Seattle is noisy. We all understand that living in a city, any city, is going to come with some noise. But imagine waking up to this three times a week before 5:30 a.m., which is, of course, completely unreasonable and incredibly inconsiderate, and it's taking its toll on Tommy.
At 5:22 in the morning, when bottles are smashing and, you know, trucks are flooring their engines and beeping and dropping dumpsters, you tend to wake up pretty aggravated and pretty frustrated. The cats will run all over the place. You can hear the dogs in the other apartments start barking. I myself probably swear. Probably the first word I say every morning is probably a swear word. You know, I'm just so aggravated. And that really has, you know, affected my life. I wake up, I go to work, and the only thing that's on my mind is, you know, bitching about these trash trucks, you know. And it's really affected our mornings, and every day we talk about where we're going to move, you know, how terrible it is in the morning, how badly we slept, how badly we woke up.
Now, I know at this point some of you are saying, oh, boo-hoo, you choose to live in Seattle and this is what you get. Understand his position. Put yourself in his shoes. We're not talking about noise at 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. or 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. We're talking about it before 5:30 a.m. Now, normally in situations like this, you would have someone fighting for you on a city level. But his council member, Sally Bagshaw, she's kind of given up on her job. She's given up on her district. She's done at the end of this term, so she's not really caring anymore, and she's not really doing anything despite repeated requests from us to try to just get a comment on something like this. And if you think that maybe, oh, doesn't Seattle have a noise ordinance? Most places have noise ordinances. They do. Unfortunately, in this case, it's zoned commercially because there are some businesses in the area, which means that this can happen at virtually any time. So then I reached out to Recology. They're the ones who own the trucks. And I asked them what could be done. Now, initially, they were like, it's not us. That's not us. But then I had some video that I showed that was clearly them. And then they looked at it. And then they got back to me. Quinnipuzzo, Recology's government and community relations manager, she emailed us. She said, we looked into it and determined that this is a commercially zoned area, which is why we were there prior to 7 a.m. That being said, we do our best to accommodate areas that have a mix of commercial and residential properties, and we'll be moving this stop to later in the day to accommodate residents who may be impacted by the noise of early collection. So that's good. They said, you know what, we're going to push this a little bit later. Now, today, I guess they didn't push it that late because I got a note from Tommy saying it was still happening, but I got off the phone with Quinn about an hour or so ago. And she said they're going to move this until after 7. And on top of that, in the communities that are directly impacted by this kind of early morning pickups, the kind, because a lot of people on Twitter reached out to me and emailed me and sent me Facebook notices saying, actually, this is happening in my neighborhood at like 4:30 a.m., which is, of course, ridiculous. They're saying they're going to dismantle the beeping sound for the reverse of the truck. So you're not going to have to hear something like this over and over and over again at 4:30 a.m. in the morning. So that's good. Now, the question is, of course, why does this... No, I can't even get into the end. You're disrupting the show. Stop it. Thank you. Why does this matter? Well, because this is really all about respect. This is 100% about respect that city government has for the residents that they're taxing the hell out of. You move into a neighborhood in the city, I totally, just like Tommy, grant you there's going to be some noise. This is unacceptable to me. And this happens in communities where you don't have someone looking out for you. There has to be someone on a local level, usually the council member, who's going to step up and say, you know what? I care about my residents. I understand that this is mixed use, but we need to do something to mitigate this. At least not have it happening three times a week. That's crazy. We all know that trash needs to be picked up. But we can do it in a smarter way. And sometimes all you have to do is complain. Sometimes all you have to do is make that phone call. Yes, it sometimes helps when you connect a talk show host that a lot of people are scared of. But sometimes you just got to stand up and say, this is wrong. We need to take back our communities. Sometimes that means we're talking about crime that's going on, right? Sometimes it means that the schools aren't working. But sometimes it means something as small as this that might seem small to you if you're listening right now in Bellevue. If you're listening right now in Snohomish or Issaquah or Squim or Spanaway, where this maybe doesn't impact you, but imagine if it did, you would be upset. And just because some folks live in Seattle, because I've seen a lot of criticism of the story online, on the comment section over at KTTH.com, people saying, oh, well, you know what? You shouldn't live in Seattle. I'm sorry. That's not an acceptable response. And we wouldn't say that if you were dealing with a problem in Yelm, well, you shouldn't live in Yelm. Shouldn't live in Redmond. We wouldn't say that. We would say, okay, being reasonable people that we are, this seems outrageous. This seems unfair. We're going to get involved. I saw some people on my Facebook page, and I swear people are testing me, Producer Peyton. People are testing me.
I do that every day.
People are really testing me.
That's trouble.
Because they go, one person goes, well, really, at 5 a.m., you should be up and ready for work. We're not farmers here.
No.
So I'm supposed to get up at 5 a.m. in the morning to start my day? I don't get into the office until about 8:45, okay? I'm not getting up at 5 a.m. That's absolutely ridiculous. If you want to get up at 5 a.m., cool. Someone else said, well, you know what? You should have moved there if you knew that this was going to happen. I'm sorry, are you supposed to camp out outside for 24 hours to get a general set? This is a reasonable assumption that you're not going to suffer with this kind of noise at 5:30 a.m. in the morning. That's a reasonable position.
It's called scouting. You gotta go and scout your location.
And for 24 hours, I'm gonna go hang out there. And I found out at 3 a.m. this was happening. That's outrageous. Now, if you want to help me shine a spotlight on this issue, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. Text R-A-N-T-Z to 1-800-465-8770. Read this story. Share it on your Facebook, your Twitter accounts, LinkedIn. Send it to friends and family. Let's shine a spotlight. And if something like this is happening in your area, not necessarily the exact same story, because I can only put so much pressure on Recology. But if these kinds of small things that are really meaningful start to impact you, it's important that you speak up. It's important that you contact your Seattle City Council member if you're in Seattle, your Bellevue Council member, wherever it is, contact your representatives. It actually can work. And when they ignore you, that's when you come to me. So text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. In the story, also, there's video of this happening. It's maddening what they're doing. And they're backing up almost slowly to make a point that we're here and we don't care about you. This should piss you off. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. Let's welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Anti-Trump activists and politicians and analysts, all the talking heads on TV and on the radio, they all claimed that Trump rallies ended up increasing hate crimes in the cities that hosted them. And it shows you how evil and bigoted not just President Trump is, but all of his supporters are, and how he has inspired this kind of hate. Only now the whole idea of it has been mostly debunked by a pair of Harvard researchers. That one talking point is now moot. Now, the original study was done by three professors at the University of North Texas and Texas A&M. And it was picked up pretty much everywhere. CNN was going on and on about it. Washington Post, Vox, candidates like Ilhan Omar, a vicious anti-Semite. She tweeted out, counties that hosted a 2016 Trump rally saw a 226% increase in hate crimes. Assaults increase when cities host Trump rallies. Your rhetoric is directly and indirectly inciting hate, Mr. President. Oh, she was such a hero. So unironically speaking out against hate. So a pair of Harvard researchers decided to look into this study, and it said they replicated the result as best as they could because they didn't have access to the original research data or code, but they were able to look it up independently using the exact same analysis, and they actually matched a lot of it. They said in Reason, wherever possible, we copied the decisions that are mentioned in the original paper. Our headline results were very close to those reported in the original paper. But that's not where they stopped. They decided to go one step further. They did the exact same review of the effect Hillary Clinton campaign rallies had. They used the exact same formula. They went to the exact same cities in which Hillary Clinton hosted a rally. They looked at the hate incidences. And guess what they found? An even greater increase in hate crimes than the Trump rallies. An even greater increase in hate crimes in cities that hosted Hillary Clinton. And they write in this piece in Reason, that should be enough to give any reader pause. The implied reasoning of those who cited the initial study was that Trump's caustic and seemingly racist rhetoric contributed to a crueler, more discriminatory climate ripe for hate crimes. If this interpretation is correct, why did Clinton inspire as many, if not more, hate incidences as Trump did? Did calling millions of Americans deplorables promote violence? Now, of course, the answer is no. I don't believe that Hillary Clinton and her rallies inspired hate crimes any more than I believe Trump's rallies inspired hate crimes. So what's going on? How did they get these numbers? Well, it's actually a glaring problem in the original study, as they say. They say politicians tend to hold political rallies near where large numbers of people live. And in places with more people, the raw numbers of crimes is generally mechanically higher. Simply put, no one should be surprised that Orange County, California, with a population of 3.19 million, was home to both more reported hate crimes, number five, and Trump rallies, two, than Orange County, Indiana, population of 19,840, which had zero of each. They say the study is wrong, and yet journalists ran with it anyway. Of course they ran with it anyway. There's something about this particular administration that the media loathes particularly, and they've decided to push aside any rational judgment of data that's put in front of them, and they just put it out because they like the headline. They like what it represents. They've been saying over and over and over again that Trump is a racist bigot and he's making people's lives worse. He is going after minorities. He's putting their lives in danger. And then all of a sudden, when they get a quote unquote study that backs up something they already believe and have been saying, well, confirmation bias kicks in and they just decide, oh, I'm going to just agree with it, put it out there. And you know what? We're just putting it out there anyway. It's up to other people to go ahead and look. I haven't seen CNN or Vox cover this story very much from Harvard University students. I haven't seen it coming from them. Why is that? Confirmation bias. They don't believe it because everything in their heart tells them that Trump bad, Orange Man bad, bad for country, bad for communities of color. So they're going to ignore this. Of course, they're never going to go after Hillary Clinton. Oh, she's old news. She's not even a public figure anymore. Although when she says anything anti-Trump, they go ahead and cover it the exact same way. The media is dishonest in the way they cover Trump. And Trump knows that. Last night at that rally in North Carolina, he had a joke about a third term, which is a joke he's been using over and over and over and over again, and then over again some more, that the media willfully takes out of context.
I announced today that we got the Soccer World Cup. That's a big thing. Who else is going to do it? But it's, we've got a problem. It's in 2026. Gianni Infante, who's a great guy, and we announced it in front of the press. And 2026. And I said, well, wait a minute. Under the normal rules, I'll be out in 2024, so we may have to go for an extra term. Oh, they're going crazy. They're going crazy. Tomorrow you're going to see headlines. Trump wants an extra term. I told you. I told you. He wants an extra term.
He's right.
He wants an extra term, ladies and gentlemen.
The media does this over and over and over again. They always take a clear joke and pretend that it was put out there in all seriousness. And sometimes they say, oh, well, you know, is this really something to joke about? That is subjective. That question and answer is subjective. I personally don't care if I can very clearly tell that it's a joke. It's not an un-PC joke. I can tell when he says this, it's a joke. I can tell when Obama would joke that it was, in fact, an attempt at humor. I'm okay with that. The difference is, these folks in the media are pretending that it's not a joke at all.
We told you. We told you he's a dictator. We told you. No, no. I'm only kidding. I'm only kidding. But we actually have the World Cup. It's the biggest sporting event
Yay.
In the world, and we got it, and that's great. We're working it also with Mexico, Canada.
I mean, I don't care about the Mexico and Canada part. It's all about this whole idea that we're going to do it in North America is kind of a little bit of a cheat, I think. Right?
You're not big on that?
We can accommodate it just in the United States.
I think so, too.
You don't really have to get all visas and passports involved for all these players any more than they already have to deal with it. Let's just make it easy. We've got plenty of stadiums here in the United States. And by the way, when they go ahead and do this in other countries, the travel times between the stadiums is not that bad. Russia was an exception. But for the most part, when you're doing it in a European city, for example, or Dubai or wherever, like, it's not that far. It's a pain to travel in the United States, especially into Canada and Mexico. I'm assuming they fly private.
Yeah,
but it's still long. Have them here in Seattle. Have one or two in L.A. and in New York and Atlanta. That's it. Just mix them up. We don't have Mexico. Canada. Canada's the worst. It's a Jason Rand Show.